we're seeing more people want to go to work. Okay. And we know in the long term, that's going to be, you know, disinflationary. So these are good things, you know, and the weatherman says there's a 50% chance it rains tomorrow. And it rains. Was he right? Was she right? If it doesn't rain, were they right? So we have fewer job openings, more people looking for work. Okay. That is a bit of a canary in a coal mine for somebody with, you know, without a PhD in economics. We need to do a Venn diagram of how many flat earthers are also preppers. I'll bet you that overlap is greater than 50%. You're like, you're not giving me a vaccine. Give me my can of 9-year-old SpaghettiOs. I'm fine. That's much better. The trial had little to no effect on the polling data. In fact, I think it actually helped him in some ways.
Only Trump, man. Only Trump.
The guy just.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, I mean, John Gotti ain't got nothing on Donald Trump. He is the Teflon Don. He just is. And they don't want to let that one go too far because that one is very difficult to unwind.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show presented by Wealth Partners. Joining me, as always, is the founder and esteemed Chief Investment Officer of ARPG in Las Vegas, Matt Dahl. My name's Garrett Lill, and Wealth Partners and the Intelligent Investment Show is here just to try to give you some straight financial talk and stock market talk in terms that you can understand from some professionals who are actually familiar with the industry. So, Matt, thanks again for joining me as always, dude. Always look forward to it.
As always, man. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. So we chatted yesterday a little bit, and the word of the day with you seems to be normalization of the economy. Talk a little bit about what that means, I guess, for investors out there, because we've got all this data, and for the longest time we've been, you know, the last 10, 12 years, we've been trying to jumpstart the economy or keep the economy going from the financial crisis to COVID and everything in between. And then there was a fear of an overheated economy. And so I can kind of frame it that way and kind of understand where that's going. But when you talk about normalization of the economy, what's going on right now in the data that you're seeing? You know, and what does that term mean? And what does that mean for the market?
There's two sides, right? There you have the normalization side, and then you have the intervention side. Okay. The Federal Reserve will intervene in the economy when they need to by either cutting rates to increase liquidity into the broader economy, thus grow the economy, or they'll restrict the economy through monetary policy, raise interest rates, or go through the QT, the quantitative tightening, by letting bonds roll off the balance sheet every month. Okay. And there's this push and pull about hard landing, soft landing, no landing, as far as getting inflation to cool, but not having the economy stall out. And there's been a lot of talk, specifically this week, as it relates to the JOLTS, the job opening labor turnover survey, the JOLTS. How many available jobs are there in the U.S. economy versus how many workers are there able to fill those jobs? Right. So pre-pandemic level was 1.2. There was 1.2 available jobs for every person looking for a job. Prior to 2019, 2018, it was closer to one. Okay. So the JOLTS report actually, it whiffed pretty hard. It missed by 301,000 openings. Consensus estimates for job openings last month was 8,360,000. It came in at 8,059,000. So it missed by 301,000 actual open jobs. So, of course, the parade of bears came out and said, see, the labor market's cracking, that they're not going to stick this landing, the economy's cooling off, earnings are going to suffer, the economy's going to suffer. And when they have to cut rates, when they have to cut rates, that's indicative of the economy starting to slow down and earnings are going to follow. You know, make sure you have a pantry full of, you know, meals ready to eat and, you know, lots of bottled water because we're all going to be suffering in a post-apocalyptic dystopia. Okay.
So, I have a friend actually who has he knew someone, they had written the book basically on post-apocalyptic survival, and he's got the whole kit. He's got the cave and the mountains already dug out. He's got, you know, a 75 year supply of water.
Preppers or something like that?
Yeah. I think they're closely related to flat earthers, but we won't go there. We went there last time.
You know what? We need to do a Venn diagram of how many flat earthers are also preppers. I'll bet you that overlap is greater than 50%.
Absolutely.
I mean flat earthers to preppers, not preppers to flat. I bet I'll bet you more than 50% of flat earthers are also preppers. More than 50% of preppers are flat earthers.
Yeah. And we got a glimpse of that during COVID. I think we really got to see some of those that were hiding kind of came out into the open and exposed themselves. You can see who they are.
Oh yeah. You're like, you're not giving me a vaccine. Give me my can of 9-year-old SpaghettiOs. I'm fine. That's much better.
Oh man, we can digress so quick on this. I love it. You were saying that they have to, or we're falling into the apocalypse.
And that's where the disconnect is, right? In my opinion, that's where I think the disconnect lies. They don't. If they cut rates, it's to normalize the relationship between the secured overnight financing rate, the federal policy rate, to the bond market, to GDP, to inflation. It's normalizing. That relationship needs to exist. A more historical relationship needs to exist. Right now, it's full on restriction. Okay, it needs to find its neutral range. Okay, restrictions a range, neutrals a range, accommodative is also a range. It's not a number. Okay, it's not, okay, at 3.75, we are now neutral. At 3.74, we're accommodating. At 3.76, we're restricting the economy. It's a range. And they know they're in the restrictive range now, at the upper end of the restriction range, by the way. I mean, of course, restriction, I guess, theoretically could be infinite. But they're at the very upper end of historical restrictions. Okay, so they need to bring that, they know they need to bring that down into a more historical, normal relationship as you juxtapose it with, where's GDP going to be? Where is inflation going to be, specifically as it relates to, you know, PCE, not necessarily CPI, because the imputed prices of CPI also bring in it with the stock market and things like that. So it's not as clean as PCE is. So that's why the Fed looks at PCE. So PCE is 2.8. Okay. So we're not sitting at 4.8 or 6.8, we're 2.8, and they're trying to get to 2 in the 2 to 2.5 range. So we're pretty close. The discussion of and the commentary of, well, when they begin to cut rates, that's the blessing from the Federal Reserve that this economy is gonna crash, or it's gonna crash if we don't do something. It's not it at all. The economy can do just fine. In fact, we've had some pretty confusing, but cross currents as far as the labor market data this week, you know. But it's confusing if you don't really know how to look at the granular components that make the numbers. Okay, so maybe we can clear this up a little bit for people that are listening. Available jobs, we just talked about, missed by 301,000 openings. Okay, but the non-farm payrolls report came in this morning. Consensus estimate was 180,000 job growth for the month of May. Okay, Dow Jones estimate was 190,000. Okay, came in at 272,000.
Okay. The new job.
April. Yeah. 272,000 open jobs. So it blasted that the estimates by quite a bit. Okay. April number was revised down 5,000 jobs from 165,000 to 160,000. And March's number was also revised down by 10,000. By 10,000.
These are new job openings, not new jobs taken. So these aren't new hirings. These are just jobs that are now available.
These are non-farm payroll additions. These are new hires. Okay. Correct. These are net new hires. Okay. Right. So if we had a negative number, there was net firings net layoffs last month. We had a net hiring last year, 272,000 jobs on an estimate of 180,000 to 190,000. However, we have less open jobs. Okay. The other thing that may have confused people, well, how can we increase by 272,000 jobs on estimates of, call it 185,000, and have the unemployment rate go from 3.9 to 4.0? Okay, that is the break even, right? So the break even to have unemployment stay at 3.9 or 4.0 is getting much higher. That means more people are out there looking for work. Okay, that to me is disinflationary, very disinflationary, because now we have more labor supply coming, okay, less labor demand there, and there'll be more productivity per available worker, because if there's less if there's more people going for your job, you're going to work a little harder. Okay. Productivity goes up. Supply goes up. Supply goes up. Obviously, that'll bring down price. These are very good indicators long term. Don't get me wrong. The market, of course, did its normal chop that it did this morning. And it's up today again. Here we are, record highs. The market went, the bond market went right through, stopped right there at 430 to 435, had a real tough time. Then we had those kind of those weakish labor numbers this week. ISM services came in a little light, all of those things. And the bond market came down. We actually went to 427 on the 10-year. Job report came out this morning. Bang, 442. Here we are again. But the equity side is seeing through it a little bit. Okay. This is just bond market beta, right? That's what this is. Okay. It's the bond market traders. Okay. But the equity side, we're looking at this as well. No, we've had restriction in the economy. Okay. We're seeing more people want to go to work. Okay. And we know in the long term, that's going to be, disinflationary. So these are good things, and there's a lot of good things happening. I think the Fed is doing a real good job of this. They are keenly aware of every component of labor and inflation. And that's kind of the other side, is the normalization versus intervention, is because of JOLTS this week, because of the tick up in unemployment from 3.9 to 4.0, even though we had 272,000 jobs created, that lets them know more people are looking for work. So what I think we're going to see at the Fed meeting coming up is you're going to see language that Jay Powell talks. He's going to start shifting some of that focus that has been just inflation for the last 3 years, basically. Okay, we're going to start to hear more about the labor market and concerns that they don't want to take that labor market too far. Right? They definitely want to rein in inflation. But they're seeing this labor market. Okay, now we have people looking for work. Is that because savings are down? Is that because there's more people available to work? Is whatever it is. So we have fewer job openings, more people looking for work. Okay, that is a bit of a canary in the coal mine for somebody without a PhD in economics to say, okay, that is sort of the first off ramp to the labor market could seriously be cooling. Okay. And they don't want to let that one go too far, because that one is very difficult to unwind.
We like to think of economics as a science. And it's interesting to me that in academia, it's actually an arts program. You get a Bachelor of Arts in Economics. And I remember my macroeconomics class. I didn't do particularly well in either economics, micro or macro for that matter. But macroeconomics to me seems so backwards and so counterintuitive in so many ways. And I remember going to my teacher in that class, my professor, and saying to her, I have a problem with this. There was a problem or an assignment that I was struggling with. And I said, I don't really understand, because I believe if we do A, that would make B happen. And she said, that's true. And I said, but it also feels like if we don't do B, it would make A happen. That's true too. Whatever it was, I don't remember the scenario, but it was basically something where it was like, there are two right answers. And she's like, you're right. And I said, okay, I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying here. I'm trying to explain to you that this is a trick question. And she's like, you're right. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're like. We're on a totally different wavelength. Now, the most ironic thing is that I think my average score for that class was like a 77, and I made an A. So apparently she just wasn't really good at math. But there is something about economics that as finance people, we like to think finance, right? Variables, mass, time value of money, multiples, things like that. That's not the way economics works. You just in your segment right there, you just probably covered 20 different things that I could play out in my head if I wanted to play it. If this, then that, but if that, then this. And you have to understand people get on the Fed a lot, and I'm not making a stand from one or the other for or against anything with the Fed. But they are balancing a lot of things out. So, for example, here during COVID, I remember in the beginning of the pandemic saying, you know what, the government's going to have to intervene here because the economy is, and I am a free market guy, so I'm not really big on government intervention, but I'm thinking they're going to have to start putting some money into this economy or we're going to be in big trouble. And they did in record proportions. And then 6 months later, because people figured it out, companies became more efficient. We figured out how to DoorDash. We figured out how to do virtual meetings, and we didn't lose as many jobs as we thought. So now we flooded the market with more money than they needed. And now we're paying $12 for a cheeseburger that used to cost $3. And now everybody's complaining about inflation. But then, because people still had government assistance, they weren't working. So there was a labor shortage. So I couldn't get a cheeseburger because I go to Burger King. Nobody's there to serve it for me. So there's all of these things that feed off of each other. And it's this balancing skill where if you get too much on one side, it goes too far. And then you've got to balance it the other way. But if you're not careful, that can have a different impact on something that was unintended. And there is such a science to that whole thing. And then the stock market is just its own sort of spinoff of that. And okay, like I said before, sometimes good economic data is bad for the stock market. Sometimes good economic data is good for the stock market. It depends on what the stock market wants. How do you manage all that? And my brain's exploding in that little 4 minutes of talking about all that. So how do you kind of anticipate where those dominoes are going to fall?
I guess it's kind of like predicting the weather. The weatherman says there's a 50% chance it rains tomorrow. And it rains. Was he right? Was she right? If it doesn't rain, were they right?
Or were they That's not philosophy. Right? That's not even finance now. We're getting really deep.
So it's like, so when you look at economics, and it's an arts degree, it's the study of what we think people will do with their money. Right? And where they're going to spend that money and how they're going to spend that money and how much money will they have to spend. Okay. So, and when it comes to those sort of discussions, it's not really a, I guess you're right, it's not really a right or wrong answer. So if we say, okay, the economy is growing by 2% in 2024, grows by 3.5%. Okay. And then we say, okay, well, in 2025, we think the GDP will grow by 2.7, cooling, you know, 70, 80 basis points from the 3.5% in 2024. So if it cools to 2.9, were we right or wrong? Cooled. If it cools to 2.3, were you right or were you wrong? Okay. And that's where when you answer a question as far as that relates to economics, it's that's right, but it's also sort of right over here too, and it's also sort of wrong over there. So it's like back to the Venn diagrams. There's Venn diagrams, but some are more right than others and some are more wrong than others. And then the market's job is to decide on what part of the economic cycle that we're in to whether or not that's a price positive or price negative thing, right? Yeah. I.e., are we recovering from an economic slowdown? Thus, increasing JOLTS numbers are good. Earnings growth is good. You know, maybe interest rates even going up is good. If we're on the cycle where the economy was way too hot and we had way too much, you know, labor demand for way too long, and we see a hot jobs number, well, that's going to make interest rates go right back up and thus make capital more expensive, reduce liquidity, and maybe bring prices down. So the same number, the exact same number on a labor report could have two diametrically opposed outcomes in the stock market depending on where we are on the cycle. And that gets to my Howard Marxism, right? Howard Marx of Oak Tree. We try to figure out where we're going. That's a very important thing. However, the Marxism is Howard Marx, not Karl Marx. Howard Marx, very different. The opposite, super capitalist, super smart guy, okay? You better know where you're at. You had better really know where you're at. It's great to know where we want to go. That's great. That's what people try to do. But you really had better know where we're at. So to take a number and encapsulate and say, well, what, you know, we have 8 million open jobs. That's a good number. But okay, let's say it came in at 9 million jobs. That's an even better number. That's more people that are looking for more work. That's even better. That would have had a, if we would have had 9 million open jobs on the report, on the JOLTS report on Tuesday, this market would be down 3%. Okay. Now, let's just say 3 years from now, we go through a recession and we're coming up and we have 4 million jobs. Okay. And then the consensus estimate for that month is 4.1 million jobs. And it comes in at 5.1 million jobs. the market would absolutely explode, okay, from a much smaller number because it was beating estimates on the upper, on the higher side because it's trying to recover. So it really depends on where we are economically, how that information will catalyze the market. Will it catalyze it negatively? Will it catalyze it more positive? And that's sort of the tricky part of economics as it relates to the stock market. The stock market and the economy are different. They're very, very different. However, the stock market and earnings aren't that different. Earnings in the stock market correlate 94%. Earnings and GDP and the economy correlate very closely too. I don't know what the exact number is. So they're not direct siblings. Well, they're not twins, but they're siblings, I would say. They're closer than that. So I sort of take a different position. I do think the economy is closer to the stock market than a lot of people give it credit for. As far as we look at different catalysts in the market, what's going to catalyze the market? What coming up can catalyze the market? Will it catalyze the market to the downside? Will it catalyze it to the market to the upside? And what's the likelihood that the data that we receive is going to catalyze it up or down? For instance, the CPI report coming in on next Tuesday, okay? Consensus estimate is 3/10 month over month, okay? If that comes in at 4/10 and services and housing and auto insurance, they don't crack and they still stay high, and the 10-year goes from where it is now, 4.41, and it goes back to 4.50, yeah, the stock market's going to have a solid sell-off. And it's probably going to last a couple of weeks into PCE. If it comes in at, you know, 0.2, a little bit lighter, okay, and the bond market comes down to 4.25, the market's going to like that, okay? And it's funny, there was a person on more from one of the big banks. He wasn't a wealth guy. He was one of the bigger equity director of equity in U.S. markets for one of the big banks, right? Yeah. And obviously a sharp guy. And he said something really stupid. He said, "There's nothing's going to catalyze the market. There's nothing. The market's just going to sit here. It's not going to do anything until next quarter earnings season. The only thing that will move the market going forward is earnings now." And I thought, huh? I completely disagree. The earnings for next quarter, the consensus estimates, those are in, right? We kind of have an idea what they're going to be. And we're pretty sure they're going to beat those estimates by about 7%. Okay? That's priced in. What's not priced in is an outsized data point on an inflation number, on a labor number that could catalyze the market, okay? And that really could catalyze the market. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I think if we get a consensus number on Tuesday, which is very likely, I don't think the market will do much with it. If we get a consensus number in PC at the end of the month, I don't think the market will do much with that either, okay? But I don't think the market will do much with earnings estimates, with earnings beating their estimates by 7% either. They would have to actually miss estimates by, or just hit estimates actually, and that would catalyze the market. So there's a lot of good news priced in right now. So that the catalyst to move the market up from here are limited. The catalysts to move the market down, frankly, are growing. Okay, and I'm not a bear. You know that. I'm bullish at the end of the year. But if earnings miss a little bit, that could bring the market down. So he didn't clarify the catalyst being a negative catalyst or a positive catalyst. And maybe he meant to say, well, I don't see a really big chasm between now and earnings, and the only catalyst I see would be actually a downside catalyst. If earnings are missed, or frankly, earnings are just, we just meet earnings, because right now we're thinking we're going to exceed earnings.
So I know we're on a pretty tight time window. So one last sort of quick question here. I mean, dude, props to you. I love it when you say stuff on the show that ends up starting to play itself out almost like you saw it coming, like crystal ball type stuff. It's really weird. But your end of year target started off at 53.50 for your base case. Correct. You said, I believe last show,
Yep.
I'm not changing my case. I think it's going to stay. I think that is where we land. Now, we may go above it, we may go below it, and I don't know what the path is going to be, but I do still think we'll land at 53.50. You said you thought that as we got closer to the election, you thought that the market was going to start to price in the possibility of rate cuts later in the year to basically fight back against what you kind of saw as being an economy that might be, I would say, weakening then. Now I'd say maybe normalizing is the word you're using. I think that's a more correct way of saying it. So now here we are 2 weeks later, the market's at 53.58 as of the time I hit record on this thing. I mean, that's within a tenth or two of a percent of 53.50. Interest rates are at 4.41 or 4.42 as of the time I came in here. I think it was 4.60 or 4.70 when we talked a couple of weeks ago. I mean, dude, it just seems like you're just spot on every single time. Now, we got a long way to go, and I know that was a longer, you know, that you were talking about now to the end of the year, not now to the next show. But I say that to say, two-part question here, sort of, but it's kind of the same. Speaking of catalysts, you said the last time if Trump is elected, you do think there's more runway and more room for us to go higher, and you would probably revise your number up a little bit more towards the buller, the more of your bullish cases, or maybe even go higher than that. So how does the Trump conviction change? Has that affected your thoughts at all on that? Or how does that, what do you think that's going to do to the market? Not so much what does it do to your thoughts, but how has the Trump conviction impacted the market's expectations?
A Trump election, right? Trump winning the White House, or the likelihood of Trump winning the White House after Labor Day. Okay. Because again, the market's a discount, it's a forward discount mechanism. It's going to price it in well before the election day. And if the market really believes it's going to happen, they're not going to get caught off sides like they were in 2016. And that gets us into, okay, how is Trump going to engage corporate tax policy different than Biden? How is Trump going to engage corporate regulation different than Biden? Okay. How is Trump going to, you know, manage the economy differently than Biden? So, you know, first and foremost is if Biden wins, the corporate taxes will go from 21 to 20%. That's going to happen. Okay. If it's almost a certainty, if Trump wins, rates will stay at 21%. Right. And that's for effectively about $15 a share on the S&P 500. That's about the number. I think the market will price in corporate taxes not going up after Labor Day, if the polls stay where they're at, directions stay where they're at. Apparently, the trial had little to no effect on the polling data. In fact, I think it actually helped him in some ways.
Only Trump, man. Only Trump.
The guy
get
just.
From a conviction.
I mean, it's like he is the Teflon Don. He just is. So the guy just. John Gotti ain't got nothing on Donald Trump. He is the Teflon Don.
This episode, he is the Teflon Don.
And the other thing is, there's going to be that qualitative, artistic side, I guess you might say, of people going, I don't know what's going to happen, but with Trump in, I know it's going to be turn on Thunderstruck from AC/DC. That's where the economy's going, you know, right? So I want to be there. I want my money there. I'm going to put my money in there, you know, hell's bells, let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. And then you're going to get the third, the tertiary wave of what's everybody doing? I want to do that. And then, bam, you know, and then it's just going to take the market. And that could take us up to 6,000 this year. It really could. So our base case was 53.50. We put that out in December of 2023. Okay. People thought we were nuts. Okay. And here we are, June 7th, and we are at 53.60. Okay. Our bear case was it's usually about 5% either way, right? So call it 50-50 or 5,050 on the bear case, 5,600 on the bull case, right? But, you know, I will say that the beginning of the year, I did not think earnings were going to grow quite as fast as they have gone. And, you know, when the data changes, we change our mind. So I might revise my target next month. We're going to take a look at it. I'm really going to look into back half of 2025 earnings estimates and see if we need to revise it. We need to revise it. We will revise it.
Well, I mean, you said you're not a bear, but if the market keeps running up from your target and you don't change it, then doesn't that, by definition, make you a bear by accident?
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to be an accidental bear.
Well, I know you've got to run. Always a pleasure. Before we go, the Intelligent Investment Show is for entertainment and education purposes only. Matt and I do not know you, so we do not know what you should do with your money. We just get on here and talk about what we know so that you can hopefully have better information to make your decisions with. However, if you would like to talk, well, first of all, if you do want to get investment advice from someone and you do need to seek a professional to help you make decisions with your money, you should seek a professional, not Matt or I, unless you want to reach out to Matt directly, which you can do at, I know 702, but I'm going to let you take the rest of it. I know you know your number better than I do.
Oh, yeah. 702-655-8300. Any one of our advisors would love to help you out.
And you can also find Matt at intelligentinvestment.com. You can also click a link that'll be in this show description wherever you're at, whether you're at advisoradvocates.com/intelligentinvestmentshow, or you're at the Wealth Partners YouTube channel, or you're on Spotify, or you're on Apple Music. Wherever you are, check out the description. There will be a link that will get you to a page where you can reach Matt if you'd like. But aside from that, don't take anything we say as the gospel. Take it with a grain of salt. But if you do want to talk to somebody, that's how you can reach Matt. And he would love to get to know you better. And his team can take care of you. So, Matt, I know you got to run, brother. Thank you, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.